honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, shining a spotlight today on the new documentary film, Unbroken Honor, which you can watch on YouTube right now. It's an hour and 10 minutes long, and it is well worth your time, even if you'd call yourself an expert on the Japanese internment and the exploits of Nisei veterans of World War II. Let's listen to another short clip from the film to give you an idea of what I'm talking about.
For many of the Japanese Americans now confined in these prisons, going along with Executive Order 9066 peacefully and willingly, was a show of loyalty to their country and the American war effort. However, some of the young men would launch campaigns of consciousness against the stripping of their constitutional rights, while thousands of others would go on later to serve their country and eventually die in places like this forest in eastern France that for a short time became a battlefield to prove their love and loyalty to America, to ensure a better life and a restoration of freedom for their families they left behind. This is the story of the young men who fought for a country that had turned its back on them. The Nisei warriors of World War II. Men that proved with their hearts, their minds, their bodies, and their blood what it inherently means to be an American.
We're going to get one final thought from the filmmaker, Jeff Aiello, before we're done. I want to know what he wants all of us to get out of watching this documentary. But before that, let's dive back into Lawson Sakai's story. He was one of the more than 800 casualties suffered in the 442nd Regimental Combat Team's legendary rescue of the Lost Battalion, liberating a little more than 200 mostly Anglo soldiers who had been surrounded by German forces in those very same mountain forests that you'll see if you watch Unbroken Honor.
The weather was so bad, and of course we didn't have winter clothing, and we were soaking wet from the rain, and the hills were muddy. We're in the Vosges Mountains, the thickest forest that we'd ever been in. The Germans had the 88-millimeter anti-aircraft weapon, lowered it down, and started shooting at the infantry. That sound of that 88 going off and exploding, that shrill sound coming is something that I've never heard duplicated in movies or anything. It's just mind-shattering. You know, when it comes directly at you, wow, you know, it just, the sound itself is enough to blow you apart. But when it would hit these trees, branches would come off. Sometimes half of a tree would come falling down, weighing maybe 1,000 pounds. A lot of guys got crushed. Just, and the morning that I got hit, the 28th of October, we're going to mount a real strong attack at daybreak. And the Germans probably sensed that we were, because we had a big battle on the 27th. We gained the high ground. We dug in as best we could. That early that morning, the barrage came in, probably lasted 20, 25 minutes, maybe more. I don't know. Maybe 100 rounds, just bang, 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 just continuously. We were pinned down. You couldn't move. We had a lot of casualties right at that time. And, of course, when I got it, well, I thought I was dead. So I was out of it. But
I imagine you had probably had some close calls before that.
Yeah, I got wounded twice in Italy and then once before in France. So, but they weren't that bad, you know.
Well, define that, because you say, yeah, I got wounded once. Well, yeah, and most people have never been wounded, period. So when you say weren't that bad, what do you mean?
You know, I got patched up and I could go back a day or two. Mm-hmm. But the last time, the shrapnel that got me in, if it came straight through, it would have blown a hole through me, but it came in at an angle, so it wrapped around in my ribs here. Oh, that was really painful. It just, you know, a red-hot piece of steel in there, and it just, your body just gives way. You just curl up, and you can't breathe, and I was sure I was dead. I remember I told the medic, just let me die right there. And he pumped me full of morphine, because when I woke up, I was on a train on a litter. They were going to the American Hospital in Dijon, which is not too far away, for surgery. And I don't know how I survived that one. But guys were getting killed left and right. You know, mostly the barrage from the artillery. Just an awful shattering of not only the artillery shell, but the tree trunks and limbs coming down. In Italy, we had a few vineyards, a few olive orchards. Most of the hills were bare. Got to France and eastern France, and all of a sudden this huge forest that we had to go through. The Germans were already entrenched, dug in, so we had to go into the forest, dig them out.
You're going into a meat grinder.
Yeah.
What about your recovery? How long did it take to recover from those wounds?
About 3 months, but not too long after October 30, when the 211 men were rescued, Dahlquist pushed the 442nd for another 4 or 5 days before he let them come off the line.
Right.
We had so few men left. I think I Company had 8 out of 250 or so.
8 out of 250.
Yeah. I think our company, E Company, had probably the most. From what I heard, we had about 40 men left. But the 442nd really couldn't do much in it. They're just depleted. So they were sent to southern France between Italy and France, and a hillside where, like the Maginot Line, they had fortresses built. And the duty was to guard the French-Italian border and the port cities of Cannes, Nice, and that area, patrol all of that. They called it the Champagne Campaign because there was very little battle going on. But there was a few. One of my friends, Sakamoto from the Valley, he got killed there. I think he's about the only one that was killed during that time. Mm-hmm. And the 442nd was there like from the middle of November till April. And that's a time when all these young kids now, the Army changed the designation back to 1A because of what the 442nd was doing. Mm-hmm. So they made them all eligible for the draft and were being drafted. And they were being trained at Camp Shelby. So after about 6 months, they were sent over, and they came in en masse to fill up the 442nd again.
Right. It needed a lot of filling up because of how devastated it was. With those 3 months of recovery for you, were there ever days where you weren't sure you were going to make it? Or you weren't sure you were going to be yourself again?
No, I was in good shape after the surgery. A little painful, of course, but... Mm-hmm.
Did you have broken ribs?
Nothing broke. It just... a lot of muscle tear, which is pretty bad.
And there are a lot of internal organs inside your rib cage. I mean, there's a lot of damage that could have been done there.
It didn't go in. It didn't come through. Went around. Mm-hmm. So it just luck.
The angle was everything.
Yeah, just luck.
Was it luck or was somebody looking out for you?
I don't know. You see guys that... they get hit square in the head with a bullet. Jeez.
Well, here's the other thing that strikes me. Your injury, which almost killed you. I mean, we're talking inches probably from killing you. But had you not been wounded that day, 442 has a couple more days of combat before they liberate the Lost Battalion, and a lot more guys died in those 2 days.
That's right.
Is it possible that getting wounded when you did could have saved your life?
Very, very likely. From what some of the guys told me, the day that I got hit, after the barrage, they made their way forward, but they had a tough time. That was the 29th, 28th, the next day is the 29th. They could hear firepower, but it was not coming at them. So they knew that must be where the Americans were trapped because the Germans were shooting at them.
And one of those Americans in the Lost Battalion, part of the 36th Infantry Division's 141st Regiment, was a man who later on would become close friends with Lawson Sakai, Al Tortolano.
Oh, I don't know. It was almost like being reborn, I think, because you don't know what to think. You know, while you're there and the way things are going, your mind is first on your family. You know, will I ever see them again? What will happen? How will they take it, you know, knowing that we're never going to, I'm never going to come back. And it was just, I don't know, the feeling that we had. But then when we found out that they finally broke through, oh, man, it was like the sun coming out after a storm, you know. You figure it was 7 days of what we went through. It was really hell up there because we couldn't really dig in deep because it was mountain, you know, and there was a lot of rock and stuff. You couldn't really dig a foxhole. And even if you did, the tree bursts, you had to worry about tree bursts, you know. When all of a sudden we heard one guy say, oh, my God, we're fighting the Japs. Because we didn't even know at the time that there was a 442nd. Mm-hmm. And yet they were attached to our division at times. Mm-hmm. But we didn't even know. And that's why that's one guy that made that remark when we saw Japanese soldiers who were fighting the Japs. But then we found out they're our rescuers. And all we wanted to do was get out of there. And so we took off. I mean, we didn't stop to say thank you then or anything. All we wanted to do was get our butts off that mountain.
And I'm sure it wasn't until later that you realized the severe losses that they absorbed. They lost more men than they saved in terms of rescuing you. When you figured that out, how did that weigh on you? How did you process that, knowing that many men had sacrificed their lives for yours?
When I finally got to the, you know, thinking, really thinking about it, I know when they first rescued us, I was so happy and thankful. And then when we found out years, we didn't know until way later how many they actually lost. And I thought about it, I felt so bad. Because I said, here's a group of people that were used during the war. I don't know how to put it, but it seemed like when any dirty job had to be done or any fighting that they feel was almost impossible, the 442nd was always involved. Then I find out what their parents went through. And for them to volunteer to fight for their country like they did, I didn't know how to think about it. I just grab them and want to hug them, you know, and show them how you really felt about them.
You talk about wanting to hug them. I'm sure you've had the opportunity to meet some of the soldiers from the 442nd. What is that like for you? And is there anything that needs to be said? Is it a look in your eye, a hug, a pat on the back? Or have you had a chance to actually speak to them how much you appreciated them saving your life?
Oh, yes, I sure did. For about 8 years, I've been a volunteer up at the VA hospital in Palo Alto. Well, one day I'm driving the little shuttle around, and this Japanese-American, Lawson Sakai, says, are you Al Tortolano? And I said, yeah. He said, well, I'm Lawson Sakai. He says, somebody told me that you were driving. He said, I was with the 442nd. Oh, my God. He says, is there any chance we can get together and talk? I says, oh, yeah, yeah. So anyway, we started talking, and that's how I started getting involved with the 442nd. From there, they started inviting me to their different functions. I went to their reunions in Las Vegas as their guest. They named me an honorary member of the 442nd, and we got to swap stories, and I got to meet so many wonderful people.
And what does that do for you when you get a chance to talk to them and thank them? Do you feel like you're just speaking for yourself, or do you feel like you're speaking for all 220 guys who were saved by their brave actions?
Oh, no, I'm speaking for everybody. Yeah, because I know how they felt, not only speaking for those 220, I think I'm speaking for every other soldier that was in combat over there, thinking, man, if every division had a 442nd, what a great thing that would be. It would have been for everybody. Every time I see one, I don't care if I saw him yesterday and I see him again today, it's like another new beginning, you know. I look at him and say, wow, this is one of the guys that the reason I'm maybe standing here today. Maybe we would have gotten out of it. We never know. But as far as I'm concerned, they were our saviors. And they deserve every little hello or thank you that they can get.
And in 2011, they received another big thank you. All Nisei veterans of World War II were honored with the Congressional Gold Medal, the complete opposite end of the spectrum from the way Americans of Japanese ancestry were treated 70 years earlier. Let's get a piece of perspective today from the Purple Heart and Bronze Star recipient we heard from earlier, Lawson Sakai.
Well, you know, the whole country is formed by immigrants. So it's pretty hard to say one group of immigrants can say we're American, but you immigrants are not Americans. That doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that correction was a huge step in forming the United States. Something that had to be recognized. And in 1941, this whole country was run by the East Coast people. And a lot of those people, including President Roosevelt, had very little knowledge or contact with Asian people at that point, because almost all of us were on the West Coast, and East Coasters didn't want to mingle with the savages on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
They were, it was like, those animals out in the West Coast, So I think the war did bring both sides together. East went west, west went east, and things changed a lot. I think we did what we intended to do. I'm sorry that, like my parents and all the other Issei who are now all gone, didn't really live long enough to capitalize on what we had gotten for them. 1952, I believe, they were allowed to become naturalized citizens of the United States. A huge turnaround from deportation to naturalization, and all because of what their children, the Nisei boys, did for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is very important to impress on, like, my children and their children, that they know that that first generation that was born here suffered along with their parents because they couldn't get jobs either. But by doing what they did, going to war and so forth, they created the life for them that's so good.
The one and only Lawson Sakai, featured prominently in the new documentary Unbroken Honor. And to put the finishing touches on this episode, I want to go back to the leader of the team that produced this film, Jeff Aiello.
The biggest question, and maybe the toughest question for a filmmaker, is what do you hope people get out of this? What do you hope the impact of this film is as people digest it?
For me, the big takeaway that I hope people have with this film is There's a couple of things, but they're all sort of related. One is we're all the same. Japanese, Russian, Chinese, Italian, French, whatever, wherever we come from. And you learn this when you travel the world a lot. And I get to travel the world a lot. And I say it in the open of my travel show. When you travel, the world becomes a smaller place. The reason I say that is because you realize we're all the same. We're all very similar. We all want the same things. And so to go back and look at the lessons of that we learned from hate, in specifically Asian, hate, both the Chinese and Japanese, prior to World War II, and what that led to, I hope that we remember this story, because it showed what happens when a population is prejudiced against one race or another, one ethnicity or another. Those Japanese Nisei and Issei were put into these camps, stripped of their civil liberties, no due process. And yet they persevered with that quiet resilience, gaman, as it's known. And then when we asked them to go fight for us, they had every reason in the world to say, pound sand, Uncle Sam. And they said, nope. And they signed up twice as many as we thought would sign up. And so I hope people that are judgmental towards other races remember that story, because these, I said it the other night, yes, they're Japanese Americans, but they're Americans. And that's all they wanted to be looked at as. So I hope the takeaway from that is patriotism comes in all forms. It's not just white people that are patriots. and there's patriots that are Americans from all backgrounds, races, ethnicities, religions, doesn't matter. And just remember that. And be kinder to people. Be kinder to one another. That's all I hope people take away from this.
What a fitting way to wrap up today's edition of Hometown Heroes. Thanks again to Jeff Aiello and everybody who made this new documentary, Unbroken Honor, possible. Find it right now on YouTube or follow the links at hometownheroesradio.com. That is all the time we have today, but thank you so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you one more time that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.